Okay, welcome everyone to our podcast. And today we're going to be discussing something called The Oatmeal, which is a comic. But even though it's a comic, it presents us with some serious ideas. So we're going to talk about the way that the comic presents the ideas and what we think about that. We're also going to talk about what we think about the ideas that are being presented. So the first question is, what do we think of the art or visuals in the comic? So are they effective? Are they appropriate? Why did the writer or artist choose to communicate in this medium? And then the second question is, what do we think of the idea that the brain resists new ideas? Is that true for all people that we know? Or are some people a bit different than others? Or maybe are some ideas a bit different than others? And then question three, does it make a difference that these ideas seem linked to American identity? Because a lot of the comic seems about American ideas. And question four, what do we know about American slavery and patriotism that affects how we read this? Because a lot of it is about slavery and patriotism. Question five, do we believe in the backfire effect? And question six, do we like this emphasis on how emotional ideas are? And question seven, we were talking about how they represent opinions as animals and how cute that is. Seems very cute. All right, so let's start off with that question. What do we think of the art or visuals? And I wanted, first of all, to say that I forgot to introduce Sasha. Sorry.
Hi, everyone.
So Sasha, yeah, who are you, Sasha?
Yeah, so my name is Sasha. I'm currently studying human resources management at Seneca. I was a previous student of Professor Korist and had the pleasure of taking her courses in ENG 106 of my first semester. The articles we read in class were eye-opening, and they can still be applied to different conversations I have with colleagues today. So I'm super excited to be a part of this and shape the way that you see the world in the future.
Ooh, shape the way that we see the world. Yes. That's great. I like that. When I taught you, was that the last semester before COVID?
I think, yeah, it was. It was, yeah.
It wasn't we had to stop teaching and go online that semester, right?
Yeah, my final exam with you was online.
Okay. Gosh, that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
That was like,
oh my gosh,
2 years ago. Is that possible?
Yeah. COVID ago. Has been a blur.
It's been 1 year ago. It's not 2 years. 1 year. Right?
Yeah. 2020.
This is crazy. I'm like losing track of time. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the first question is, what do we think of the art and the visuals? Are they effective and appropriate? Why did the writer or the artist choose to communicate in this medium? So Sasha, I think you have some things to say about this.
Yeah, I thought they were really easy to follow. They definitely lightened up the mood and helped avoid readers becoming offensive, because there are some interesting points that they bring up that could really bother people, and right away you want to argue some of the things they say. I also thought it was effective in being unique. Like, I haven't really read anything like this before with cartoons that are like so cute. And in fact, it kind of looks familiar, and I'm not sure if anyone in your class will notice, but if you've ever played the game Exploding Kittens, I did a little bit of research after I read it, but the game Exploding Kittens was by the same artist. So it's an actual famous game company, and I think they use them to get a younger reading audience, because the game is for young adults. But yeah, I think it helps make it fun and avoids friction.
Gosh, Exploding Kittens, what is
that? Yeah, it's just these different types of kittens on each card. There's one that's not safe for work, there's just a friendly one. They're like so cute to read, and like half the reason you play them is just to look at the cards. So I feel like it's the same thing here, where it's like half the reason you're going through this article is just to look at the pictures.
Oh, okay. Well, I should definitely check this Exploding Kittens thing out, because
yeah.
I love stuff like that. I think it's really neat and fun. I mean, I think the majority of us love pictures, right? Like, we love to read and look at pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the reasons why we all spend our lives watching Netflix these days, right? We much prefer pictures to words. Even though I love words so much and I read and I have read lots of books and I still read actual books, but I'm sucked in, like I'm seduced by visuals. And that's happening here too in this comic. So why did they choose? I think one of the things about the unusualness of comics and serious topics is that I think, like, I'm pretty familiar with comics that are intelligent and complex and kind of mm-hmm. for adults, but I find that a lot of people who I teach in college and university are not as familiar with these graphic novel presentations.
Mm-hmm.
But I suppose they haven't really been around all that long. So I suppose, like, I read Maus, which is a graphic novel about Auschwitz. I read that when I was about 17 in first year university. So it was assigned reading in my first year university English course.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of shocked me that there would be comic books that would discuss serious issues, but I was also really taken with it. And so I read a number of graphic novels that were really, really political, like political documentaries about Palestine and Bosnia, and like they're kind of historical journalistic things. So anyways, there are lots of things out there like this. So if you like this kind of thing, there's so much more like this to read. It maybe takes a little bit of digging to begin with, but it's a whole growing section of the bookstore.
Yeah. As a writer yourself, Professor, like, why do you think they use this style to express the writing?
Well, I mean, I think it's partly because the artist enjoys it and feels that that's their way to self-express. So we all have individual ways of expressing ourselves. And mm-hmm. some people like to express themselves in pictures as well as words. So I think part of it's like just up to the artist and the writer. But I think, of course, also they were thinking this might be educational and this might appeal to people who otherwise would not want to read a long article about something.
Mm-hmm.
So why do people draw comics? I think because number one, because they want to, and number two, because they think it will be entertaining. I think the idea that educational material should not be entertaining, like, I think that idea is kind of a new one. Like, educational stuff was always supposed to be entertaining. So the word educate comes from educo in Latin, to lead out. So I lead out, educo, educere. I'm going to lead you somewhere. I'm going to take you somewhere. And in order to take you somewhere, to teach you something, you kind of have to entertain someone. Otherwise, someone will just be bored, silly, and they'll fall asleep and they'll forget mm-hmm. everything. So that's what children's literature has always been about, is educating. And so in a way, this is like children's literature because it's aimed at people who are more visual. And that's how we think of as children. But children's literature appeals to everyone and it educates everyone. So that distinction between children's and adult literature is not really fair, I think. So anyway, that's a very long answer to your question.
No, definitely good to hear and interesting. Yeah, just like going back to like how children read and how it still applies to us in the future.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, I taught a course in children's literature maybe 6 years ago. And one of the texts that we did in the course was, you know, 18th century textbooks. And you really see this attempt to draw cute pictures that kids will like.
Mm.
So this is what's going on here in the oatmeal. And I don't think that's wrong. Like, as an adult, there's still a part of me that enjoys being like a child. And if I learn that way, there's nothing wrong with that. Like, anyways, okay, let's keep going with our question. So one of the ideas in the comic seems to be that the brain is resisting new ideas. So do we think that's true for all people we know, or what do we think of that idea? That the idea that the brain is resisting things somehow?
Like, for me personally, I didn't really resist any of the question, like the ideas, just like I felt like an outlier when I read this. But I, like, by the end of the comic, I could tell, oh yeah, I know people who would react just like this and would definitely be immediately searching up the facts just to see if it was true or not, because they couldn't stand just seeing that maybe the president has teeth from slaves or whatnot. So I definitely felt like an outlier myself, but I could see how people can relate to it. And not everyone is like this, and it depends on how you're raised and your social surroundings. So I think just the way that you cope with arguments in general might change the way that you view this this comic as well. But I think the brain does resist new ideas depending on how different the idea is compared to what we know, which it mentions in the comic as well. For example, I would have a hard time believing that there is another world within the Earth, say the center of the core, if someone were to say, oh, there is, right? So it just really depends on how important that fact, or how long, I guess, I've flourished that fact.
So Sasha, I'm going to ask you kind of a difficult question then, because what you just said is you see yourself as an outlier, which means that you don't really agree that you're that kind of person. So you're not the kind of person who is going to resist new ideas. Mm-hmm. So if you think that, then aren't you resisting the idea in the comic? Like, aren't you resisting that idea that we were?
Oh, it sounds like the Matrix. I'm not sure. Like, I feel like part of the comic, it kind of mentions that they're like the person who doesn't believe in whatever fact that's being brought up or information that's being raised argues and immediately goes on the offensive, or at least that's what I interpreted from their writing. So I feel like I'm not like that. I'm not fiery. Like, I'll wait, listen, and kind of do the research, because I think I've had it a couple of times where I've been raised to think something and then I see that I was completely wrong. So I think from that experience, I've like learned to just stay quiet and then do the research afterwards to determine which one's right or wrong. But I don't know. That's what I interpreted.
So you're like passive aggressive.
Yeah. Where I'm like, who knows? I could be completely wrong. And then I'd look like a fool.
You're quietly doing the research.
I'm not as fiery. Yeah.
So when I read this, I agree. Like, initially when I read this comic, I'm like, I'm not like that. Like, I'm open-minded. Mm-hmm. And in specifically, I don't resist any of the ideas that they present to me in the comic. For example, they present to you the idea that, you know, George Washington's teeth, was it Jefferson or George Washington?
Washington.
Washington,
yeah.
Right? Washington's teeth were made from the teeth of slaves. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty disturbing.
Yeah.
But I don't resist that idea. I'm like, yep. Unfortunately, American slavery was a horrific institution, and they did in fact do things like this, so not surprised at all. So I don't resist the specific ideas in the article, but when I think about how I have conversations with friends, I think I absolutely do this all the time. Mm-hmm. All the time. So they'll say something, because I consider myself an authority on a lot of
for sure. You're also a doctor, so
I'm like a professor. Yeah. Like, that's why I did my PhD, so I could be considered an authority, right?
Yeah,
like, that's part
for
of
sure.
it. Part
you
of
did
the pack,
years.
Part of the package.
Yeah.
like, you know, years and years of education. Mm-hmm. So hopefully now, like, it goes useful or something. but it's terrible, right? Because even when I have conversations with people who I know to be much more knowledgeable about a particular subject, I'll be like, but.
Oh, yeah.
like, I think maybe, you know, have you forgotten this thing? Like, I'm terrible for correcting people, like just the worst. And I actually have to really put a lid on it when I'm talking to my students, because one of the important things in teaching, it's funny how we're coming back to teaching again. One of the really important things in teaching is, like, I'm here to allow students to voice their opinions and learn to articulate their opinions. Mm-hmm. So students will not learn to speak or think or articulate their opinions if they don't ever get a chance to do that. So, you know, really my job is to, you know, shut up and get students to speak and say things. And so, but if I'm always correcting them, that's not going to happen. So I have to kind of keep my mouth shut and just be like, that's interesting. Keep talking. Which doesn't mean that if I'm doing that, I don't believe what you're saying. But...
Yeah, I guess it depends.
I think I do resist. So let's say I'm really wanting to think of a specific example, and I want to pause the recording and think. But like if someone tells me, oh, such and such was in the news today, I'll be like, oh no, I heard the vaccine clinic was in a different town.
Oh yeah.
Like, I'm just the worst. I'm like, like it doesn't, and it doesn't even matter. Like I don't go and check the article to check that I'm right. I just say it. Like I just.
Oh, yeah. I used to be a lot more like that, but like, I think I hate being wrong more than being right. Yeah.
That's really funny.
Yeah. It sounds like it contradicts itself, but like, I hate being wrong more than just being right. So like, I'd rather just be like, oh, really? Like, let me just check up on that. Let's see who's right. I'm like, oh.
And the phone is a terrible thing, right? Because you can check now.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you're having an argument with someone, you can be like, well, let's just Google that right now.
Yeah. Like, right. It also like creates this distrust as well, because the other person's like, why don't you just trust my point?
So here's a really like great embarrassing example for me that sometimes comes to mind. So 4 or 5 years ago, well, okay, must be like 5 years ago now, Trump was getting elected, right? So he had just been elected, and I was teaching an ENG 106 course, and we were doing our typical reading the news, analyzing current events, discussing our opinions, agree and disagree. And someone in my class wrote this essay on Trump. And he said something like, you know, that Trump had manipulated the election with the help of the Russians.
Yeah.
And I was like, no. I was like, you know, I feel like that's plausible, but we don't have enough evidence. And to be perfectly honest, half of America is racist and right wing, and that's why he got elected. And I still kind of believe that. I'm like, unfortunately, there's like a good portion of the United States who doesn't care that Trump is racist and discriminatory and oppressive, right? Unfortunately, that's how it is. And the 51% won. But, you know, my student was right. And there I was telling him that he was wrong. So,
yeah.
I was resisting, right?
Yeah, in one sense. But like, I feel like both sides of that like conversation are always, you know, valid just because the conspiracies and like quote unquote fake news. So it's always hard to like deal with something that's like you can't even find a right or wrong answer to. Like I feel like that's the worst sort of backfires, where like both people could be right because there's no wrong answer.
Yeah, let's talk about that backfire effect. Let's skip ahead to question 5. I feel like we're gonna skip over some of these questions. So what is the backfire effect again?
I think...
Let's look for it.
Yeah.
I think it's... Okay, let's go down. I'm going to have
to... Yeah, it's like closer to the bottom.
Okay, let me just mark where we are in the recording, because it's 2:53... I'll have to search for this. I'll have to search for this and delete it. It's okay.
You just passed it.
Oh, okay.
It was the bended gun, like right above it.
It turns out that going bonkers, like getting really angry about something, right? So we're presented with something that is quite reasonable and it goes against what we believe. And then so... even like we're presented, and then because for some reason we get very emotionally attached and we get angry and we refuse to accept the truth, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So do we believe in that?
I'd say yes, just because people like refuse to consider the possibility that they were mistaken. And when they have pre-existing evidence that supports their past beliefs, it's a lot harder to accept something that's new. And I think that applies for almost everything in science, where, say, Einstein came up with something and all of a sudden now we have something that proves he was wrong. A lot of people would be reluctant to accept this new, I guess, like science thing. You can tell I'm not in science.
Yeah, the science thing. science thing. Yeah. So I agree with them that the backfire effect exists, and I agree with what you said generally. I think I agree maybe for different reasons than they present. So in the comic article that we're reading, they present new information as, you know, we're presenting evidence, we're presenting information, and people respond to it by getting emotional. But I think that people don't really change their minds based on new information often. I don't think, I'm not convinced that presenting people with evidence and information is an effective way of persuading people, which completely goes against what I teach half the time. But I, like, let's say that you have an opinion and you read an article that is trying to persuade you of the opposite idea. It's pretty well documented that that is like the least effective way to persuade someone.
Yeah.
So I think persuasion is so much more complex than we think. Like, there's a theory of persuasion that I teach, which is ethos, pathos, and logos. We persuade people through logos, which is words and reasons, and we persuade people through pathos, which is emotions, and we persuade people through ethos, which is authority. And I think that pathos and ethos are actually more effective ways of persuading than logos most of the time. I don't know why that is. And I mean, obviously logos is really important, like it really matters to me, but I think that words in general and information don't usually work. And maybe that's why I spend so much time talking about pathos in my classes and ethos. I just think that those matter a lot. And I think in this article, they're really just talking about information or logos. Like, you're presented with information in words and then you react emotionally. And I'm like, well, of course you react emotionally. Like, we're emotional beings. We're persuaded by emotion. We're probably more likely to be persuaded by something emotional than something logical.
Yeah. So say the section in the comic where it's just a black background and it kind of says, so what if I said that George Washington's teeth were made out of slaves' teeth? So there you don't see any image, but it's just black and it kind of, you know, sends you into like a darker place. Would you think that's pathos because it sets you in this place of worry and fear? Because now it could be like concerning that he's using human teeth.
Yeah, I would say that's potentially pathos. It's a visual effect. And often the way that visual persuasion gets analyzed is in terms of pathos. So we don't, like I said, ethos, pathos, and logos, and kairos, those are ancient Greek terms that we sort of translate. And we've been using this ancient theory to talk about persuasion, and we still think about it in those terms. But really what's going on here is visuals. The visuals are persuading us about something, or the visuals are having an effect on us, right? It's like, ooh, before it was white and there was black on white, and now it's black and like white on black, and ooh, that's different. You know, like, hey, right. Brain, like do something else. So yeah. That's, but I don't know that that's necessarily emotion. I mean, for thousands of years, philosophers thought that the eyes and the visual capacity was linked to emotion, but that was part of their theory of how the brain was laid out. Like, they had a very particular idea of what part of the brain was connected to what part. And so they thought that emotions were connected to visuals. And I think that's why we continue to talk about visuals as a kind of emotional persuasion, but I'm not necessarily convinced that it's really emotion at all. I think it could be just visual. Do you know what I mean? It could be visual persuasion. And there are actually books now with chapters on something called visual argument, which is like, this is how the visual persuades us, as opposed to this is the emotion that the visual gives us. But yes, you could say this is pathos. Like, that's that's how it's been analyzed often by people who talk about pathos. They say, like, people who say that pathos is working in a text will say, look, there's an image of a bunny and the bunny is cute, and the cute bunny makes me feel warm and safe, and that's pathos.
True. But I also
you could just say, well, the bunny is cute, and that persuades me.
That's fair. Yeah. I also speaking about like the comic, I also noticed that they kind of transition you into that question where they first start with wood, then they start with animals, and then they start with humans. They end with humans. So it was like this like transition into it instead of just immediately saying, oh, what if the teeth were made of slaves? Like slave teeth. Yeah. So like I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
And then another thing is they never confirm or deny if they use it. So I actually had to go and do the research to figure out if they did.
Right. Yeah. So that what was did you think about that? The fact they didn't present that?
I thought it was, I think they wanted to avoid the argument and they were trying to get to a point where they can actually explain the theories instead of just having someone stop there and then discredit the whole like comic and leave the page. So I think they were just trying to lead you up to what was important.
And then underneath, you know, what if I told you it was made from the teeth of slaves? Underneath that, it says source one, source two, source three. Did you click on those?
No, I haven't. I didn't even think of that. Oh, I had no idea that those sources were to prove that. What? I went and Googled it myself.
This is exactly how we all make work for ourselves, right? Like we just don't read it closely enough, and then we have to go and do all this extra reading to.
Oh my goodness!
Right there. Yeah. Like who knew you could actually like click through and the comic is interactive. So
yeah.
Who knew?
No, that's definitely cool. I found out from JSTOR that he paid slaves for teeth, so he paid his slaves for it, which was cool.
My background knowledge on this topic is I've read articles on soldiers in the 19th century, and I know that they used teeth from other people. So it was a thing that people, like poor people, would get their teeth pulled out and they would sell them to rich people.
Wow.
And like they would sell teeth to make money. And so this has been the case for hundreds of years. And so if you think about it in that context, you're like, yeah, teeth were sold. People had their teeth pulled out and sold the teeth. So then if you think about slaves, well, slaves are considered objects, economic objects for sale. So yeah, actually it goes along with that logic, unfortunately. Horrific, but true, and makes sense in some weird, horrible way.
Yeah, for sure. Like even just drawing back to like the previous questions that we skipped over, it was like hard for me to even like say yes or no to the question, like the facts, because I wasn't American. I was not raised to learn about American history unless it involved Canada. So it was like, it wasn't as relevant to me.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I myself don't have a lot of connections to America either, but again, I do have kind of a background understanding of the fact that, you know, some presidents owned slaves.
Oh yeah.
Jefferson specifically owned slaves, and he had a slave mistress and he had several children with her.
Mm-hmm.
And I've read about this kind of thing. And so it doesn't kind of blow my mind that someone who's an American president would have taken advantage of this kind of horrific industry and teeth. So I don't really resist the ideas in it, I suppose. So like you said, I'm like, oh yeah, makes sense in some ways. It's not like I believe it one way or the other. I think it would be interesting to see a comic like this about Sir John A. Macdonald or Ryerson, right? So in some ways the comic is very current because it touches on these issues that we are discussing this year and last year about Black Lives Matter. So this comic's been on this curriculum for a few years now, and I'm glad that it's still relevant in that way. I'm glad that it's still relevant. I'm glad that we're still reading something that's relevant.
Yeah, for sure. No, like even before we move on from this president, he was an active slave owner for 56 years, and after he died, he freed all his slaves. So he was the only founding father to do so, but he still was an active slaveholder for like his whole life. So that's another thing to think about.
Yeah, it's disturbing. It's a real thing. There's so many repellent facts about famous historical people. Like, I don't know. Where we, I don't really know where we start.
Yeah, I think that's why they used someone who held power and led the country, like in the comic, because it strikes, it worries people more, I think, because someone in power was doing these things and someone who's like leading the country and instilling these unjust laws, even though it says that he paid for these slaves' teeth, but there are other people who don't, you know, so at that time.
Interesting. I'm wondering if we do we have questions still to discuss, like
I think the last question, do we like this emphasis on how emotional ideas are?
Okay.
So in my personal opinion, I think they only focus on the argument aspect of emotional ideas in the comic, and in a way they discredit the importance of emotional ideas. It's as if they become silly and irrational in this article, and I understand the point they're trying to make, but maybe the examples were too extreme, in my personal opinion.
What
would you think? Emphasized it.
Well, it's a really good point. I mean, they're talking about a particular kind of emotion, so mm-hmm. I think they're trying to evoke anger, distress, worry, fear, those kinds of emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And those are strong emotions. And I can see the value of doing that because everyone will have a reaction. So I guess they're sort of counting on that. Like they want to make sure that their piece appeals. I think if it were me and I was teaching, I would avoid such extreme examples for two reasons. On the one hand, it could be triggering. So someone might feel traumatized by this. So I think I read through this comic with the assumption that, you know, I'm not descended from slaves. And so this didn't affect my family, right? I didn't participate in this or I didn't suffer from this. But what if someone did? It would be traumatizing, right? Like it's kind of a horrible thing. Mm-hmm. So I keep mentioning this word horrible, but what if someone comes to this with some kind of firsthand experience of something so discriminatory, so exploitative? It would be traumatizing. So that's one of the problems with discussing super extreme things.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second problem I would say is it's just difficult to teach. Like I would feel uncomfortable potentially teaching it. So I would be uncomfortable teaching something that I might accidentally say something awkward and hurtful. I think there's a tendency in teaching to sort of bring your own personal background into it, but maybe my personal background isn't that relevant, but mm-hmm. I would still want to bring it in because this is me as a teacher. So it's a bit of a struggle there. I think I would tend towards, you know, teaching with emotional ideas that are like bunnies, cute bunnies. But having said that, I know that in the past when I've taught, I've definitely picked up on some extremely triggering topics,
mm-hmm.
some extremely harsh topics. And then I kind of justify that by saying, well, it's from my own life or my friend experienced this, or this is important to me. So I suppose, you know, we do have this desire to bring things that are very meaningful to the classroom. And not just the classroom, like the materials that we teach with, right? Like this is teaching materials. So I don't know. It's a tough question. It's a really tough one.
Yeah, it definitely is. I can see how like people can view it in different ways and either agree or disagree with it. Cause I think it's valid either way. Cause it's an emotional, you know, it's like your own feeling. So it just depends on how you feel about it.
Yeah, and feelings are not predictable.
Yeah.
And they're not clean. They're not neat and tidy. And then they affect how we are able to talk about something. So if we feel strongly about it, it's more difficult to talk rationally.
Mm-hmm. Just as a last question, do you think, going back to pathos, before it starts talking about theory, Would you say would you just say that's all logos, or would you say that there is like pathos because they're using pictures to help create emotions?
I would say that some of the words and the pictures, both of them, would evoke pathos. So
Okay.
let's say if we let's start at the beginning, we have the birds sitting on the branch, and they're really cute birds. And so I think that's evoking an emotion of security, safety, humor, amusement, those kinds of emotions. And then when it shows the little birds on the branch and they're very far away and they're very little, it kind of gives you a sense of awe or perspective or the universe. Like, yeah, so I would say the visuals do evoke pathos. I would agree with you there. I think the words evoke pathos too. So let's
Okay.
say we're looking at let's say we're looking at this thing about George Washington. So you may have heard that George Washington had wooden teeth, and there's a picture of him. So the picture evokes amusement, maybe. And then I think the words evoke humor as well, right? I put the fur in First Amendment is a pun and it's a joke. And so that word is supposed to evoke laughter in us, which is pathos. We are supposed to feel amused by those words. So if those words weren't there, that would not make us
Yeah, that's
laugh.
funny.
Or the next one, would you like a bite? Again, there's a pun. And he's chomping away on his sandwich, and the image is funny, but I think also the words are funny. Would you like a bite? Or click clacking his way through a ham sandwich. That's also supposed to be funny. So anyways, that's his. And then I really like the sentence, his mouth was a petting zoo of nightmares. I think that's quite funny, actually. Like I really think that's amusing. Gold, lead, hippopotamus, ivory, horse, and donkey teeth. But I think it's funny, like a petting zoo of nightmares. And I immediately have this vision of something like Nightmare on Elm Street, or a petting zoo with ghost animals in it, right? It's a great image. It's a great, so that, what is that? That's a metaphor. It's a fantastic metaphor. And yeah, metaphors, pathos. And then I really like the cute pictures of the little bug people
People
running
running away.
away. Yeah, they're so cute. And again, it's like they're running away from this horror show. Yeah. What about you? What do you think?
I do agree. I think that the pictures do evoke pathos, and that even some of the words do too, especially ones that you picked out, like really help show that. And I think because like there's emotion in what they're saying, it's easy to feel emotion because of it. Yeah,
Yeah,
because it really
it
does
just
evoke.
comes naturally. Yeah. So maybe a pretty good text actually to illustrate the concept of pathos. So, all right. Well, I don't have anything else to say. Why don't we finish up? So let me say thank you, Sasha, for your time
No
and your
problem.
thoughts and your insight. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. I hope it helps the audience, think about pathos and how they felt about this comic as well. And thank you for having me on your podcast.
Oh, thank you for being here. Thank you.
Course.
Okay, I'm going to stop the recording.